essentially, I believe that what President Trump will do this evening is consistently reaffirm what he ran on as candidate Trump, what he said at his inaugural address, and what he has been saying for the past 30 to 35 days. He'll be emphasizing, quote, America, making America strong again. He will emphasize the fact that he's going to reinvest in our Pentagon and the military, the $54 billion item that just emerged yesterday in terms of the top-line budget document that was shared with the leadership of Congress and will become much more public for us on March 16th. We'll get the details. But I think that'll be part of tonight's address. I believe that first and foremost, he'll reaffirm his commitment to repeal and replace Obamacare. That is a message that he sent to his constituency, to the Americans at writ, to the congressional leadership in both houses, who have tried over 60, 65 times to repeal Obamacare under President Obama during his years in office. So that will be emphasized as part of his address tonight. And certainly the theme will be make it better, all right? Make it better. I'm not about to punish or in any way detract from health care for Americans who are currently receiving it. He doesn't want to, in fact, punish any Americans who are covered. As he said, it's a much more complicated issue. And to use repeal as he's using it, I think is a bit of a misnomer, because elements of Obamacare will have to be retained until the law itself is sufficiently revised. I think he'll emphasize his approach to infrastructure reform and infrastructure development, massive investment in terms of, quote, his theme of America first. Again, part of, you know, making America strong again, making America great again, making America a nation where you can trust your leadership to do what it says it's going to do. And I expect that, in fact, he'll spin off the infrastructure approach with respect to his emphasis on job creation and return on investment ROI, which means that, in fact, we will have to take from Peter to pay for Paul. And I think he made it very clear that there are going to be cuts that are going to be made, cuts in foreign aid to specific nations abroad for specific kinds of programs. There will be cuts that are going to be made with respect to agencies of government. I don't expect him to get into the weeds. I don't expect him to get into the nitty-gritties tonight as to how much he's going to cut, for example, from EPA. How much is he going to cut from NEA, PBS, for example? I know that's another target, the arts, and you know, other, quote, agencies where you may, in fact, see service-related kinds of programs taking a hit. I don't expect him to do that tonight. That, I believe, will be part of the budget message on the 16th of March. But principal themes that he's been emphasizing during the campaign, since his election, since the inauguration, are going to be reinforced tonight.
I know you've studied a lot about presidential power. How do you see that changing here within the first month of the Trump administration?
I think that President Trump, in the use of his executive order provisions, which is part of the arsenal of Article 2 in the Constitution, he can legitimately use his executive order power. I think he forcefully came in to demonstrate that, in fact, he is going to undo those negative aspects, in his view, of the Obama legacy of executive orders. He's going to repeal and change and revise, as we've seen, in a number of policy areas, most notably, of course, and most controversially, immigration, but other areas as well, in terms of rules and regulation reform. As I understand it, the transition teams and his advisors have developed an arsenal of probably between 250 and 290 executive orders that are going to be released during the course of the early part of this first 100 days of his presidency. That will work only to a point, because Congress is now back full-time in session. You know, the vacation's over, President's Week's over. They're back here to work full-time, and they're the lawmaking branch of government. So I think even though this president has utilized not only the executive order phenom, but the bully pulpit in terms of taking on his opponents, most notably the media, this president will certainly recognize that we are a nation founded upon the principle of separation of powers, and Congress does have a legitimate role to play in the lawmaking process, and the president's arsenal of weaponry is limited in that regard. He can't just have a full panoply of lawmaking power without Congress as a partner. It's not going to work longer term.
Another area that you've studied closely is intelligence, and
yes.
I'm wondering what you make of the current fracas between the White House and the intelligence agencies.
Well, part of my recognition of this fracas, if you will, is the leaking of information through purported sources in various branches of the intelligence community. And I think the president has singled out most specifically elements of DNI, the National Intelligence Agency, as well as holdovers from the CIA, even potentially from the FBI, in terms of offering unwanted, unwarranted leaks. And that happens with respect to any presidential transition from one administration to the next. When Barack Obama became president in 2009, you had Bush holdovers from his two terms who were in the intelligence agencies as part of that infrastructure. They were there as high-ranking personnel, and they were not purged immediately. I mean, some, of course, at the highest of ranks, the top of ranks, you know, tendered their resignations and left. But other senior officials were retained and remained. And guess what? We had leaks coming out of the White House agencies on intelligence when Obama first took office. So it may be that this president is certainly much more defensive in regard to the kinds of leaks that he's seen and what's happened, and he wants to react accordingly and check that kind of information flow. I don't know how he can effectively enforce it, however, unless, of course, you come up with some super litmus test like Sean Spicer checking everybody's phone to make sure that they're not leaking information out of the White House Communications Office. Do you do that with your intelligence agencies? I mean, is that realistic? Can you achieve that objective? Is it warranted? Is it even acceptable to the leadership of your intelligence community that you've appointed? So he has a national security advisor now, okay, after Flynn had to resign, but he has a new national security advisor. He has a new director of the CIA, a former member of Congress. FBI, of course, is holdover, with Comey. But as three agencies in point, defense has its own DIA, Defense Intelligence Analysis. State has its own. I mean, you're going to go after Tillerson? Are you going to go after Mattis and start micromanaging them in terms of telling them they have to clamp down on any potential leaks coming out of their agencies? How do you do that on a day-to-day basis? I don't think it's realistic, quite frankly.
Dr. Leonard Cutler is chair of the Political Science Department at Siena College, and he joined us to preview tonight's presidential address to a joint session of Congress, which you can hear at 9 o'clock on WAMC. Professor, thank you so much for your time.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.